Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ball Not Court Podcast host Cortez Paul.
Along with my co-host Paul Mack.
I want to thank you folks for tuning in today and listening to the show. Basically, we cover basketball, football, NCAA, or anything that's related to current events with a humorous twist to it, at least. You can follow the podcast at BIOC Podcast at X or Twitter. We're also on Instagram at the same name, BIOC Podcast. And you go to our YouTube channel. That's also BIOC Podcast. Our Facebook page is Balls Not Court Podcast. So if you could please just give us a like, shout, comment on any of those, and definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Balls Not Court Podcast. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Balls Not Court Podcast. Cortez Paul is here, the usual Mr. Mack. Mr. Mack, how you doing on this Thursday evening, sir?
What's up, brother? We're doing all right. We're doing
hey,
good,
man. Hey, that was a fantastic show with I got Nets crew that you had on there, man. They seem like they sound like ball knowers.
Yeah, man. They know ball.
Yeah, no, man.
So. It was good to have him fill in. It's good to have you back, but it's good to be able to go to the bullpen and bring in some good arms there once in a while.
Absolutely, man. There's nothing wrong with cross-platforming and reaching out to other people and cross-networking. And it was a fantastic show when I was editing. I had got some good piece that I love y'all talked about women's sports, man. That was a beautiful segment, I must say. Amen. Y'all kind of touched bases on where it's going, and you know, Clayton Clark is, you know, hopefully her statue and whatever her, you know, going to the Fever and how that goes, man. Hopefully it propels the game in an upward trend. So good discussion, good banter from all three of y'all on that segment. I definitely enjoyed that segment for sure.
Yeah, I know the only person that that thinks she's not underpaid is Jason Whitlock. So you know.
Oh man! Well, to quote the great Mr. Ball, Whitlock showing coming what he knows on snacks. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Nah, it's all good. But hey, man, let's get into it. NBA playoff is here. Play-in is going on right now. They got some few teams that they got to determine on Friday. So, six of the eight series are set. Two, the number one seeds are waiting who they're going to play. So a lot of stuff going on, man. So a lot of the season ended kind of crazy, man. I know for my, at least in the East, the Magic had to pretty much win their end. And that game was already stressful going to watch them play against the Bucks. Magic caught a break. I know Giannis didn't play.
That was a tough last week of basketball for you, huh?
It was, man, because all we had to do was beat Charlotte. We would have been in. All we had to beat was Houston. We would have been in. I knew Philly was going to be a tough out. We tend to struggle against Philly the whole year. So, and that was without Embiid like twice. So I wasn't very hopeful against the Philly game. But they looked better. But I think the team got a little complacent and think that they clinch, but no, man, you haven't clinched. come on. Like, I'm such a Magic fan that it's always doom and gloom. So I'm just like, until I see the word clinch, I'm like, no, I'm not satisfied, man. I'm not satisfied. I've been hurt many times by this ball club. I just, until I see the why where it say clinch playoffs, I'm not satisfied. But relief, I think the 1 o'clock game, which cool all around the NBA on Sunday, did the 1 o'clock and 3:30 games on the West Coast to prevent that whole, well, kind of tune in. try to maneuver the field and try to play and get this seed here and all that. And
you know what's funny is even with the Magic in the playoffs, so there's only so many games played every day, every week, whatever. Only two of their games are nationally televised. The rest are on NBA TV. Yeah. They'll have their first game will actually be on national TV, so be able to watch the Magic.
Which they're 1 o'clock games. Yeah. They're 1 o'clock games. They're, hey, people are probably working on the weekend. People got jobs. Yeah, we're just going to put a 1 o'clock game. As soon as I knew we got Cleveland, I said, yep, NBA TV city.
Mm-hmm.
I just
1 p.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah. And once I was waiting for them because I already knew like the Lakers was going to win that game. They was going to push into prime time against the Nuggets. I was like, yep, because I was hoping 6 o'clock, like 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock. I can prep, can enjoy my day. Now I gotta wake up super early. They got a watch party downtown and at Wall Street. So that's gonna be happening at 1 o'clock. A lot of Magic fans gonna be there. So it's gonna be exciting, but man, I just knew when I was hanging out last Sunday and they drank it, man, I'm not built for this anymore, man. I was done by like 5. came back to the couch and passed out. And I literally was like, man, I'm not built for this, man. I'm
gotta not close the season strong. Kyle, you gotta throw the four fingers in the fourth quarter, baby. Fourth quarter. Let's go.
Dude, I'm telling you, I go to Casey's, man. They make these drinks very potent and I can manage, you know, around the evening time, but man, going to 1 o'clock and then I'm all excited because they won. So now, let's go, Magic Buzz. So I'm just more amplified and I crash.
You get drunker when the sun's out, for sure.
Yeah, you do, man. And then it was Sunday fun day, so it's always crazy downtown. I left that by like 5. I'm like, I can't hang down here, man. I left. So I know I'm getting old, man. I just left. So, but nonetheless, hey, man, they clinch and a lot of stuff happened. The Knicks moved up to the second seed in a thriller against the Bulls in overtime. And Cleveland's probably kicking themselves because they rest a lot of people and they dropped to 4 and they probably had a chance of 2. Didn't know how the Milwaukee Magic game was going to go. So there was a lot of shuffling. I had some heat and Philly fans text me upset and like, oh, y'all won the game. Enjoy that play-in. It's something I want to avoid. So, no, it was cool, man. It was cool. So, NBA preview. We got the NBA. No play-in tournament going on right now. Some good games, but
LeBron James Invitational.
Yeah, basically. A lot of injuries in play-in right now, man. Zion with a hamstring.
He's not going to play. I'm a further. That shit was rigged, bro. Zion was unstoppable. Takes like a no contact injury, out for the rest of the game, misses the final 3 minutes. New Orleans doesn't even use Brandon Ingram in like the whole fourth quarter.
That was weird, right?
CJ McCollum scored like 7 points. Like, I don't know, man. It was weird. It was real, real weird to me.
Now you bring that up. That is a good point. I'm like, why is Brandon Ingram not playing? And then CJ McCollum was called. So, yeah, the NBA is funny, man. They're funny. So, but yeah, not LeBron, them won, and they move on to play the Nuggets, which I don't know why. But we'll talk about that series. We're gonna dive into all these series here. But you got Jimmy Butler had a sprained MCL, so he's done for 2 weeks. So that means the Heat has got to win without him. Chicago, Alex Caruso, he's also dealing with an injury. He's sprained ankle. Andre Drummond fought on his own teammates and hurting them. Brutal. Sacramento Kings, they lost Malik Monk and they lost Kevin Herter. So a lot of teams in the play-in is dealing with some injuries, man. So Golden State goes down. What do you think? Golden State, is their dynasty done? Is it over with before we go into these breakdowns?
I think it's done, man. I think that was it. I think Klay Thompson coming out, putting up a goose egg and potentially his final game with the Warriors is tough. I just don't think you can run that back. I think you have to look at that team, the way it's built. You know, everyone else has caught up to them now. They were miles ahead of everybody else, and the shooting The shooting has caught up with them. Every other team now can shoot. We're kind of seeing a resurgence of some of the big men in the league now. So they're just you know, a middle of the pack team. And you still have Steph Curry, but he's only going to take you so far. He's got a lot of mileage on those tires. So you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do with Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. And it's interesting. It's just weird seeing this the first postseason in how long that the Golden State Warriors are a non-factor.
Yeah. And Steph Curry, press conference was very telling. You know, usually he's always very like, hey, these are my guys, whatnot. But he's had a different tone. Like, well, I'm getting older and, you know, I'm still trying to win. So it was all about the me and I. I said, ooh, Curry is he's ready to move on, it sounds like. If he's ready to win with the Warriors or win somewhere else, if it's got to be him involved. And he usually doesn't talk like that. So kind of telling. Klay Thompson kind of see the writing on the wall the way he was talking about, well, you know, we don't want to focus on the present and focus on the future. Let's focus on the present. But this is a guy who constantly reminds people how many rings he got. So that's pretty funny and hypocritical of him to say that. But, you know, Klay Thompson got a market where, you know, maybe he want to go back to, you know, go to the Lakers. His dad, Michael Thompson, used to play for the Lakers. So maybe he just want to just go kind of play with that franchise a little bit. Maybe pick up one of these veteran teams, like maybe OKC Thunder, young team, maybe a Minnesota Timberwolves, sign vet Mem.
I think with Klay, it's what kind of a role does he want to take? Like, I know there was a lot of stuff going on early in the year when he went to the bench and he wasn't a starter for a little bit, but I mean, teams want shooting. He can still shoot. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, will he accept a diminished role somewhere else? Will he go down to 20, 25 minutes? Mm-hmm. But he's not who he used to be. A lot of teams use Klay Thompson. No, you know, you can't say you wouldn't want Klay Thompson. It's just a matter of what it would cost you to get Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting for sure.
I would take Klay Thompson on the Magic just for a gravity standpoint. I know with an up-and-coming team like that and a small market team, you have to overpay. But, I mean, hell, I'll do that for 3 years, man, if that's the case, and until Apollo and Franz and whoever's going to be part of that core figures this out. You know, that's gravity. I know everybody going to bring up this whole goose egg game he had, but that's Klay Thompson, man. He's got championship pedigree. He's got experience. He's got some moxie to him. I know he's lost a step, and he's not the defensive player he used to be. But that's still a quality player that you can get on your basketball team. Know his attitude's changing a little bit, but no, I think Klay Thompson be a good pickup. Just and like you said, Paul, it just depends what role he's wanting to play. But if the Magic was to actually be interested in him, I wouldn't be opposed to that. good size and shoot and you know shooting is the last thing to go away as a basketball player. So. I take it, you know. I would. So I think a lot of teams is going to be inquiring about him and see where he wants to go. And the Golden State Warriors, what I saw is they're $174 million over in luxury tax. And they said they don't want to pay that bill anymore. And if this is the result, I don't blame them. A play-in team that didn't make it to the playoffs, and you want to pay that bill? It's probably time to cut your losses and move on. So
I'll tell you the true irony for the Golden State Warriors is the fact that Harrison Barnes plays for the Sacramento Kings, and he was just putting daggers in those boys all night long.
Oh,
can't tell me it wasn't personal for Harrison Barnes.
Sometimes the story is writing themselves, right, Paul? It's beautiful. One more question before we dive into the postseason preview. Is Trae Young on the Hawks next year? Yes or no?
No. No shot. No way. No way.
Okay. I agree with you.
I wouldn't be surprised if DeJounte Murray's gone too. Like, there's no, if you're not going to keep them together, you might as well just dump them all and get as much back as you can.
Oh, yeah. If you can get some assets, but I think they, my personal opinion, I think they keep Murray over Trae. And then get a lot for like Trae and just go from there. But yeah,
Murray,
I think
Murray was in all the trade talk this year, and they didn't let him go. You would have thought for sure he would have got traded at the trade deadline, and they held on because the market wasn't right or whatever. But I don't know, man. There's a lot of teams that were, you know, that are building, and you know, similar like we were mentioning last week with, you know, the NCAA tournament on the women's side. I don't know what the draft talent pool is going to be like as far as getting those franchise type lottery players. So, I mean, why not trade your draft picks and get a Trae Young, get a DeJounte Murray, get Klay Thompson, get some of these guys that are established and have some pedigree to them that could really help a basketball team right now. Cause I think a lot of these teams, seeing what the Thunder have done in the past, you know, 3 to 4 years, like yeah. That's all it takes. You get a couple guys, you know, you can really take off. So I don't know. It'd be interesting for sure. But Trae Young, he's gone.
Hey, I just want your 2 cents on that. And I completely agree. I think he's gone. All right. So let's dive into the Eastern Conference. We're going to start with number one seed, Boston Celtics versus either the Bulls, Chicago Bulls, or the Miami Heat. So, Paul, I'm going to ask you, because with the number one seed, the play-in games for their opponent is tomorrow. So, for number one seed, who do you think they match up better against?
It don't matter.
Both of these
It doesn't matter. We're going to get rested. We're back to getting, like, rested, like, serious Boston now. And with the injuries to the Bulls and the Heat, whoever limps their way out of that playing game is just going to walk into a buzzsaw. Like it's not going to be fair. I mean, without Jimmy Butler, you know, yeah, no, that's probably a 4-game sweep regardless of whoever they get to play. If it's the Heat, it might go 5.
Yeah, I agree with you on that aspect too. That. You know, because I think Eric Spoelstra can get you 1 game. And Jimmy Butler being healthy would have made this series kind of interesting because of, you know, last year theatrics where Jason Tatum got hurt in the first play of the game. And then the Heat really just kind of took over game 7 and went ahead and won the game. So now it's kind of like the shoes on the other foot. The Miami superstar, their star is hurt. Boston has been rested for a week. They are the best team, best home team in the NBA. They only lost like 5 games, 6 games at home. And the last few of the end of the season, they were just resting, so they just didn't care. This is number one rated. Oh, sorry, they lost 4. They lost their 37-4 at home. Number one rated offense, as we know. Number 2 3-point shooting team in the league at 38%. Celtics are just rolling right now. So it won't apply to this series, but it will apply to when they get further. The Celtics are not the best in clutch situations. Tatum is 1 for 7 and tying or go-ahead shots in the final 10 seconds, and they struggle when they are getting into that ISO ball mode. So, I mean, what's your overall thoughts about Boston besides that? You know, they are a high-octane offense. They got Chris Tapperzingas. What's your overall thoughts on Boston themselves in general for them to gear up? Because I think most of us are thinking that Boston is they should be the favorite to come out of these. They should.
I mean, looking at where they are in the bracket, I think where, you know, we saw what the Knicks did to them, you know, last week, one of the last games of the season. You know, I think teams with high defensive rating, teams that, you know, put pressure on the shooter, I mean, they're going to shoot threes. Boston's going to shoot threes. It's just a matter of how many they're going to make. So that's why I think, like, the Magic tend to play them pretty close. You know, the Knicks played them well.
Yeah.
So if you're a team that, you know, good closeout defense, good switches, you have decent size, I think you can disrupt some things. It really just boils down to matchups. And obviously if Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown gets going early. But for me, the X factor for the Celtics is going to be someone like a Derek White. I mean, that guy stuffs the stat sheet. He's going to probably take one of your tougher defensive matchups. But yeah, man, it's – it'll be interesting to see, because like you'll see it, you've seen it kind of with Miami. The scary part about Miami with Jimmy Butler healthy is they're a top five team in defensive rating. Mm-hmm. And they put some clamps on Joel Embiid last night. He only had like 20. I mean, God almost scored 30, but I mean he worked for every point he had. And that game was, the Heat were up early, and then obviously Philly closed it out. But I just think you just got to play defense. You got to try to win with defense against Boston. You can't let them go out there and just get a couple easy gimme three pointers. Get to the foul line. So I don't think the Heat or the Bulls without Jimmy Butler can do that. So I just think it's just a bad matchup for whoever Boston gets, and they're pretty much going to just tiptoe into the second round.
Boston's going to get well rested, man. I'm telling you. I agree with you on the S factor. I think it's Derek White. This guy who's was in the running for a discussion for probably most improved player. I know at one point they was glamming for him to be an all-star, do average 15 points a game, 5 assists per game, and he does this all on 39% three-point shooting. He clamps. He accepts a challenge guarding the other team's best perimeter player. He really embellished that. He really has stepped in to really be at sometimes a number three when Kristaps Porzingis is supposed to be the number three player on the team. Derek Wright fills that role adamantly and does a fantastic job. So I think a lot of him hinges on him. Listen, I think me and Paul agree. Usually we're going to pick S factors for the other team. I just don't think the Bulls have a shot against them. I don't think the Heat has a shot against them now. It would have been interesting if Miami was healthy and everything. That's just a big ask to go up there and try to win in TD Garden or Boston Garden.
Because for the Bulls, you're not going to get the Kobe White that you got, you know, last night. He's not going to, you know what I mean? Like 40 points, nine assists, 6-7 rebounds. Like you're not getting that against the Celtics.
Derek White is guarding him. And then you can throw Jaylen Brown at him. You can throw all these other players at him. Sam Hauser's another name to watch. We didn't even mention him. This dude is a flamethrower from three-point line. Come off the bench. He's making about 39% from three. So this is not just this is a series that should have been on NBA TV. Not the Magic, man. This is the series that should have been on NBA TV.
I guess if I had to pick an X factor for the Bulls up against Boston, it'd probably be Vooch.
Yeah.
I think Vooch would have to be huge. I mean, he'd have to average a double-double. You know what I mean? Stay out of foul trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's really it. I mean, but I just don't know at this point if we're going to get, you know, 22 and 12 out of Vooch every night, especially against Boston, because the pace is going to be just crazy. So, mm-hmm. It's rough, man.
And they got the size. That's the thing about Boston, too. They do have a weakness, is their size. And so Vooch will eat against them. I feel like Bam would do a good job against them as well. So that's one thing you got to worry about. You look at Kristaps, he's lengthy, but, you know, he doesn't have much girth to him. And then Al Horford is still playing, and he's a course of himself. He's not what he used to be. He's still a decent player, but he's not productive as he used to be. So I don't know what this series, but I say we're just rambling too much. I just think it's going to be a sweep. So we're just going to go to the next series because we talked too long about this series. So my series, I think this is going to be a fun series to watch. The New York Knicks at the Philadelphia 76ers. This was where, you know, the Sixers had dealt with a lot of injuries with Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid went down with a lateral meniscus in his left knee. After an 8-week hiatus, he's been getting back into shape, kind of going into some of the games here last few weeks of the season. Philly is 31-8 with Embiid and 15-27 without him. So your storyline for Philly, or what's your thoughts about Philly? Because at one point, Philly was number two in the East, and then Joel went down with his injury, and I know it's a lot of pressure for him to play because of the award stuff, and then he really kind of injured himself. And what's your thoughts about Philly, man?
It's it's tough because obviously Joel Embiid's going to be your X factor. I mean, he can't not be your X factor. But this is a whole different conversation if Nick Batum doesn't come out and drop 20 last night. You know what I mean? Yes. So it's you know, there's been a couple of games where it's been Kelly Oubre. You know, Tobias Harris can come in and have a game out of nowhere. So it's tough when Philly's clicking, and obviously, you know, you're trying to close on Embiid, trying to close in on Maxey. One of those wing guys can hurt you. And I think that's where the Knicks have an advantage with an OG Anunoby. They play really good team defense. So I think if you're the Knicks, it's just you can't let Embiid beat you. So, yeah, man, this is – I was saying, you know, last week that if I was – whoever I was in the East, I would much rather have been the three and played Indiana because I knew Philly was getting hot and they were rolling. They were coming. They were on – they won like 7 or 8 in a row now.
Yeah.
They're rolling. They're figuring it out. Like I wouldn't want to play Philly right now. But if there's a team I would trust against Philly, it would be the Knicks right now.
Yeah. No, it's like you mentioned. Dude, the 76ers are rolling right now. But listen, the Knicks are coming on the right time too. So it's not like the Knicks coming here cold. They won their last game in overtime. Throwing fact that I mentioned before, you know, we start diving into these series here. This team went on a 9-game winning streak after acquiring OG Anunoby from Toronto. They also added some pieces from Detroit, you know, Bogdanovich and Burks. So they shore up their 3-point shooting to kind of give Jalen Brunson more operating room. It sucks that you don't have Randle for this postseason because you need bodies you can throw at Joel Embiid. With the right shoulder injury, he went ahead and elected to get surgery on that. So Julius Randle is out for the rest of the season. But this is a series that you could have really used Randle. So now you got to throw Hartenstein at him, and you got to throw Jericho Sims. You got to throw Mitchell Robinson. So that's 18 fouls you need to use against Joel Embiid. And we all know Joel Embiid is a foul merchant.
He's going to take every bit of them. He gets to the line, I think, 11 times a game. So you're guaranteed 11 of those bad boys.
Yeah, yeah. My thoughts on it is that For Philly, how I would kind of prep against the Knicks, as they got the size, in Hartenstein and Sims and Robinson, they're not a really strong blocking NBA team. They're ranked 29th in the NBA. So if Philly wants to really kind of open up the game, I would kind of drive and go at them at the paint. But on the Knicks side, flip side of things, Knicks are really good, are one of the best rebounding teams. First in offensive rebounds, and they're fifth in total rebounds. So that's one of the things that if, you know, you start missing these shots, Jalen Brunson give you opportunity where he find ways to get into the lane. So you got extra possessions to get the ball at the rim and put back up some baskets. So those are easy points. Those are points in the paint. Those are high percentage shots. So that only works in the Knicks' favor as well. So that's an opportunity that the Knicks can expose on the Philly side. Both of these teams are highly defensive rated teams, so I expect it's going to be a battle. I made a joke yesterday saying that I actually wanted to see this matchup because I feel like the game's going to take 5 hours. Jalen Brunson ought to get fouls too. You know, Philly leads the NBA, as Paul mentioned, in free throws. They average 19.5. Joel, as you mentioned, Joel averaged 11. They lead in steals, so they really got to push the pace against them. So there's going to be a lot of chess matches. You got Tom Thibodeau, who is a fantastic defensive coach, defensive mind. Nick Nurse has been there before with Toronto. He's also a defensive mind. He knows OG Anunoby. So who's your X-factor for both of these teams, Paul?
I think if you're Philly, I'm going to say Tyrese Maxey, because I think Tyrese Maxey has to make Jalen Brunson work on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to have to make him work. You know, Maxey in the open court is a demon. Guy's probably one of the fastest guys with the ball in his hands running the break. Because Jalen Brunson is going to get to his spot on offense, whether you want him to or not. Mm-hmm. And I think the only way you could really, you know, counteract that is to just go at him on the other side, try to draw some fouls early, get him kind of on his heels. But – the Knicks go as Jalen Brunson goes. So you have to figure out how to slow Jalen Brunson down. And the way he's been playing over the last, you know, month of the season, it's not going to be playing defense on him. It's going to probably be making him play defense. So for me, it's going to be Tyrese Maxey for Philly. And then, you know, for the Knicks, I think it's just kind of the supporting cast, right? We need to see the Josh Harts, the Dante DiVincenzos, these guys, the OG Anunobis, these guys show up and do what they've been doing pretty much all season since Randall's been out. Make big threes. Josh Hart somehow gets the most rebounds I've ever seen for a guy his size. I don't understand it. That guy is just a ball hawk. So it's just like you said, just offensive rebounds, second chance points, push, you know, shoot the three. And, you know, just ball don't lie. We'll see what happens after that. But I just think if you're the Sixers, you have to put a lot of pressure on Jalen Brunson on the defensive side.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you on Josh Hart. I think he's my S factor for the Knicks. Six triple doubles in the 24 game span through January and March. Dude, just listen, this is why they're one of the better rebounding teams, because the guards rebounds very well too. So it's a rebound by committee. You really got to bust out Josh Hart. He figured to get in lanes and very slippery to get there and get the rebounds. But he also moves the ball very well. He passed the ball, shoots it. So Josh Hart just fits. You can tell that Nova connection between him and DiVincenzo and Brunson. Like, they get
power
along.
Friendship, man. Power friendship, baby. Power friendship.
Synergy is a beautiful thing. And when you like to go to work every day and you like the people that you go around, it's fun. So Josh Hart just go even harder. Josh Hart has always been an instant prospect. He's one of those kind of like hybrid players that's smaller, but he's find ways to get rebounds and assists. But he take the challenge of guarding the best player. So yeah, I think you're right. He's got to really play Massey tough and guard some of these wings. You know, Kelly Oubre gets hot, guard him. On the flip side, I got to give a shout to Buddy Hield. This is his first playoff appearance. He's been in the league for almost 11 years. I forgot a fact check on that, but I know he's been around for
a while. Yeah, you're pretty. It's been a while.
It's been a while. His three-point shooting to help spread out the floor for Embiid and Maxey. Dude is 39% from three-point line. There was a point during regular season he was shooting 41%. So he's a threat out there. So I look for Buddy Hield to rise to the occasion and enjoy his first playoff series. This is some players, it takes a while to get there, and I'm happy for Buddy Hield that he gets to experience some postseason basketball. So who's your pick? How many games?
I'll take the Knicks in six.
I got the Knicks in seven. This will be a dog fight. There'll be some chirping going on, but I think the Knicks end up prevailing in this series. So, all right. Next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. You know, there's a lot of drama to this series. and the regular season, you remember that pretty much Giannis, the game ball, when the Bucks won in Indiana, Giannis was trying to get the game ball, and there was a lot of conflict and resolve that was going on trying to get the game ball.
And the in-season tournament early in the year, too.
Yep. So there's a lot of no love lost between these two teams. Giannis won't be available at the start of the series. He's still dealing with a left calf strain. Those things are a little tricky to try to diagnose and heal. So hopefully you get to see him soon, because this would be definitely a fun series and go the distance. The Bucks have just been really inconsistent ever since they hired Doc Rivers. They're going 17-19.
No.
Since January 29. I knew he was going to say that. Indiana's best offense in the league. They lead the league in scoring. Flip side, their defense is not the best. It has improved since they added Pascal Siakam from the Toronto Raptors. He's been a nice lift to their defense, just a couple of notches. Really just going to hinge on Halliburton's health. Hamstring injury held him out 10 games in January, and he's hasn't looked the same since. He's 44% from the field goal, from field goal percentage, which is down by like 5% around there. His three-point shooting really took a dip too. He was 32%. He was up near like 37, 38%. So something is still bothering him. And you know, Holly, he's got that second gear, and he needs that. But your thoughts about this matchup in general, and what you think about the Pacers?
I think even with Giannis, I think this was the worst possible scenario for Milwaukee, just because of how they've played against this team all year, the pace that the Pacers play, and obviously, you know, Halliburton health aside, I mean, it was inevitable for those offensive stats to drop a little bit. I mean, they were going to be the most efficient offensive team in the history of basketball at one point this season. So, I mean, they're still number one in the league in offense, but they had to come down to earth a little bit. You know, getting Pascal Siakam, that adds some championship pedigree to your team. You know, it's interesting because both these teams are so different than even when they probably played the last time. But without Giannis, that's huge because, I mean, he's a big chunk of the rebounds. He's going to prevent a lot of those fast breaks. And even then, he's going to get out on a lot of fast breaks for the other side because dude gets down the court in like five strides. So, yeah, man, it's going to be a lot of pressure on Dame. This is why you get Dame Lillard, right? Dame time. So yeah, now it's Dame's team. You know, Chris Middleton's still not 100% there. You know, I like the matchup for Indiana. I just think, you know, a Pascal Siakam is the kind of guy that could really be your X factor for Indiana. Maybe even a Miles Turner without Giannis in there. Yep. I think it's one of those guys for the Pacers can really kind of turn the tide because Halliburton's gonna do what Halliburton does. You know, he might not drop 30, but he's still a potential 13 to 15 assists. It's just a matter of if the Pacers are going to hit their shots or not. Siakam helps them on rebounding. I know they're not a very strong rebounding team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting. Just it's really going to boil down to Giannis's health and when he comes back. Is it going to be game two? Is it going to be game three? Where's the series at that point? Because obviously if the Bucks can jump ahead like 2-0, you maybe don't rush to get Giannis back. So, I mean, it's a lot of storylines around this series, and it's kind of one that I have circled that I've been most interested in because without Giannis, man, that could easily be a classic Doc Rivers playoff story.
Hey, love how you bring up Doc there, for sure.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't go seven for them. I hope it doesn't go seven, because if it goes seven, we know what the outcome is.
Hey, I hear that, man. So, Indy has, as we mentioned earlier in the segment, they have won four of their last five matchups. It was because of their fast break opportunities and breakdowns in the bus transition defense. Bus transition defense, they're a little bit older team. You know, they got, besides Giannis, they, Brook Lopez is a little bit older. Chris Middleton is a little bit older. Dame is was never really a top-notch defender. So, that's one thing they can really do. They can really speed up. And I know Halliburton, even I know with the injury that he had, like that's one of the things that you can really do is really push the Bucks in transition. You can have the opportunities and get some easy buckets for sure. Milwaukee has to neutralize this with their defensive rebounding. They have to get the boards. They have to be able to set their half-court offense. You can't let them get offensive rebounds. Balls go chaotic, and you start moving around. They get wide-open shots, and then you got, you know, possible Mal Turner, or you got these other guys that are available to hit shots. So, yeah, you need to make sure that you lock in, tap in. You got Brook Lopez, who's a fantastic rebound. Bobby Portis is a fantastic rebounder. You know, you really need to tap in and try to make sure you get these rebounds and lock in for sure. Fast-paced offense calls breakdowns for, like I said, about offensive rebounds I mentioned earlier. Giannis, he has to play. I mean, I don't know how long he's going to be out, and I know Lovecast strains are tricky, but Giannis, in these five contests, he is averaging 42 points and 13 rebounds. Like, that is domination. And as you mentioned, my X factor for the Pacers is Miles Turner, because you got to take advantage of that Giannis not playing. You got to get Brook Lopez out there, you know, in a triple threat and get him on a drive and catch him when he try to close up. And then you can blow past him and then be a threat to either move the ball or score in the post. Your three-point shooting, you're 35% from three-point line. You're averaging 17 points per game, almost seven rebounds per game, two blocks. You also a threat on the block as well. So, Brook Lopez, if you try to blow past, you can be that threat at the rim and be able to protect the rim. For the Bucks,
Lopez ain't blowing past nobody.
Yeah. So, Bobby Portis, OG Bobby Portis, he's been doing decent. I know he had the one bad game against OKC, but every other team he played, he really kind of done took off being in a starting role. 13.8 points per game. He's shooting that 50% clip, getting five rebounds, and he's really just the energy guy that you need until Giannis come back. So you like to see OG come off the bench and really kind of give the Pacers bench a problem. But Giannis, I guess they're just going to monitor day to day, see where he at. But I have a feeling that if Indy comes out here and get one game on the road, which they can get one on the road, Giannis going to be forced to play. So who you got winning this series? And I mean, you can answer if Giannis come back and play or if he doesn't come back, but I think with
Giannis, I don't think it matters. I'm going to take the Pacers in seven.
Okay. I got the Bucks in seven, but as you mentioned, Doc Rivers blow game seven, so I'm maybe rethinking that pick. But I think I think Giannis comes back, and Pacers gonna scare him though. Pacers sure gonna scare him for sure. But yeah, be interesting how this go. The last game in the East, the Orlando Magic versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Storylines out of here is, I don't know if you've seen some of the headlines in Cleveland. It's very noisy, man. There's been a lot of headlines where Don Mitchell has come out and said that. You get judged by the conference finals and the finals. So that's kind of weird to say that when your team is going, like, you just put a lot of pressure on your team. And he's been linked to the Knicks for the past few years because he's from the area. So Cleveland lost last year in the first round. So this doesn't really help. I know Jared Allen became a meme saying the lights was brighter than they expected. So the Cavs core four. Yes, great. The Cavs core four, that's Allen, Moby, Mitchell, and Garland. They missed a combined 87 games due to injury this season. The Magic is back in the postseason since 2020. That was a COVID year. That was the year that we had Vooch. They played the Bucks and ended up getting one game in the bubble. Vooch went nuclear in game one. And Orlando is a top three defense. They lead the leagues and turns over opponents at the highest rate. So Orlando really does key in on steals. They really try to press you from the point of attack. And, they really try to go ahead and actually try to create turnovers and get on the fast break, get easy buckets that way. Their half-court offense is still a progress and work. Your thoughts about this series, storylines with the Cavs, imagine anything that I missed that you can add, Paul? What's your thoughts
about that? From what I've seen, this might be the best matchup for the Magic, just because Cleveland's not an overly physical team. And Orlando, for that matter, is not overly physical either. I mean, they have some physical guys, but I don't think a physical, banging game is kind of what Orlando wants to do. They want to kind of get you scattered, get in the passing lanes, force turnovers. Donovan Mitchell and those guys are high turnover guys. So I think it's a case where it kind of plays into what the Magic want to do. Cleveland's the healthiest they've probably been now if everybody's playing in a while. Like you said, the amount of games that their starters have missed is crazy to still be the four seed, but obviously they started the year off super hot. They did most of their damage before the All-Star break. But this is our chance, man. This is Paolo, Franz, the future of the franchise. Big lights. This is where you make a name for yourself. So you know, I'm interested to see those young guys in the postseason getting their one nationally televised game and, you know, and see what happens. Like, I honestly think that this is a good matchup for them. It's just a matter of if you know, the shots can fall, but they're going to play defense. So it's just a matter of the shots fall.
Yeah, out of all the matches I wanted, this is the one I want. The one thing that Cleveland does well, though, they really do pack the paint. Orlando is one of the better teams in the points in the paint. So if Orlando three ball is not falling, they tend to get in trouble. So they're 13-12 this season. We're making 10 fewer triples. So 10 triples or less. And, you know, so they're going against the best paint defense in the league against Cleveland. So Orlando, even their last few games leading into this, like, teams really packed the paint and was there in Orlando to shoot. So I'm really hoping that a week rest off will help Orlando in a case that – and we really have been pretty bad with rest going into some of these games during the regular season, but I really hope Paolo seemed like he's refreshed. I just saw the interview. He's ready to go. But the thing I do like about this matchup, Paul, is that our guards got size over them. You know, Mitchell and Gardner are kind of small compared to our guards. We can really kind of bother them a little bit. And as you mentioned, Orlando is one of the better teams that can force turnovers and really instill. So, like, they're top five in steals. The thing that can get Orlando in trouble as well, they're really not a good rebounding team. They're bottom five. So it's bottom five. They miss free throws, and they have a problem with 3-point shooting. So if this comes to fruition where Cleveland locking the paint, you got Jared Allen, you got Evan Mobley, that's got a lot of size. Matt Strus tends to kill us. Jonathan Isaac and all that, you know, he's being healthy, so it's gonna be fun. Jonathan Isaac is my X factor for the Magic. Dude's really kind of came on that last game against Milwaukee. He started, and I know I was screaming for him to start, and he really led an impact in there. So 6.8, he's averaging 50, he's shooting 51% from the field, one block a game, one steal a game. This is all where they was trying to load manage Jonathan Isaac for this case, and while at some points I was kind of frustrated that they did that, seeing the long term picture now that Orlando is fully healthy, everybody's ready to go in the postseason, pay dividends. So as a fan of the Magic, I can get irritated sometimes when they load manage like players like Isaac and Markelle Fultz and everything like that, but they stay the course. I miss all the noise and really stay to the bigger picture and say, hey, if we gonna need a shot at these postseason, we're gonna need these guys. We're gonna need them healthy. And so I want to really do the stats tell the whole story because Orlando was kind of playing with different lineups here and there. And I'm aside, man. Who's your S factors for the Magic and the Cavs?
I think for Cleveland, I'll take Jared Allen. I think Jared Allen is a guy because of his size. You know, he needs to really impose some dominance in the paint. He needs to protect the rim, get those rebounds. Like you said, Orlando's not a good rebounding team. So, anytime there's a big man, you kind of got to hope because you know Donovan Mitchell and those guys they're gonna get their shots. But for me, Jared Allen, he could easily get you double digit rebounds, couple blocks. And that can really change the course of a game. He doesn't have to go out and drop 25, 30 points. He can get 15 and 10. He can probably get 15 rebounds. He can get you 15 and 15, 20 and 15, and that could be enough. So for me, it's going to be Jared Allen. And then for the Magic, obviously this is Paolo's first glimpse into the postseason. I'm kind of excited to see what he can do, but I'm going to go Franz Wagner. I know there's a lot on that man when he got drafted by the Magic. Mm-hmm. People didn't know if he was the guy to go put alongside Paolo. But I think for his skill set, what he can do, he can rebound. He can get some assists. He could shoot the three. Just a matter of if it's falling or not. So if he's knocking down threes, then that's a really good sign for Orlando. And aside from that, I'd probably say Jalen Suggs, because Jalen Suggs, I think that's those two guys for me for Orlando. Jalen Suggs and Franz Wagner are going to be huge.
Yeah, nah, that class is going to be huge, man. And it's interesting. I know Franz. This is one of the teams he really do struggle against. So I'm really hoping he kind of break out of that. We need him, but he looks refreshed since he had that ankle injury that he had against the Bulls. So he did. He does. He had a really good game against Philly. He had a good game against Milwaukee. So got a week of rest, so he really can rest that ankle some more. And it's gonna be a fun series for sure. This is the matchup that I want. I was kind of fearful of the Sixers. The Sixers just own us, man. Knicks are physical, even though we beat them a few times this year. I was like, in a 7-game series, and Tom Thibodeau is a defensive mastermind, and I don't know. Bucks kind of got our number, but we probably could have gave him a fight without Giannis. But no, I want the Cavs. There's a lot of noise in Cleveland, and I think if they're on the first round too, they're gonna make some changes as well. So, who you got? Who you got? And how many games?
I'm gonna go with my heart. I'm gonna take the Magic in six.
Okay. I was fighting this one, man. I'm just. I should be like Jamal Mosley and just say, hey, be greedy. And initially I had the Cavs in seven, but I'm going with my heart too, man. I think Orlando, if this is a series that they can win, and they really are ahead of schedule regardless. And if they win this series too, they're really ahead of schedule. And they got a matchup that they won't. If you see them locking in the paint, they're not making these threes, they're in trouble. Magic are ready though, man. I think they're gonna be all right. They're well coached, and I think they're gonna pull off a tough series in seven games. If Cavs win, cool. Hey, I'm just glad the Magic got here. We can build on something because next year expectations. This year it's just icing on the cake. So, but you know what? Let's ride, man. Everybody in is our new hashtag slogan. So everybody in. So we'll go for seven games.
It's hard to pick against a team that plays defense.
Yeah.
That's the thing is they lead with defense. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of games where your offense doesn't show up, but their defense shows up damn near every night. So,
yeah, man.
They'll be in some games.
Absolutely. All right. The West. We got OKC Thunder. It's going to either be the Kings or the Pelicans. Second year that OKC has made a double-digit leap in wins. And now they are rewarded number one seed in the West. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is obviously in the running for MVP, or at least an MVP candidate. Dude was having 30 points per game, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 53% shooting. News for, as we mentioned, Zion Williams out with a hamstring injury at home out of the playoff game. As I mentioned about the Kings, Malik Monk sprained MCL. Kevin Herter has a torn labrum, and he has surgery. So, none of those guys are good to go. We'll make this quick here with this series here like we did for number one. Paul, who should they want to play? Does this mean a little bit more since it's out West? I just feel like some of these teams are really injured against OKC. OKC, yeah. I would have been more intrigued if the Lakers would have kind of took a step back and played them.
Mm-hmm.
But this favors OKC, whoever they get in this.
Yeah, series. I mean, I think the Kings make it a little more interesting because someone like a Domantas Sabonis, I think, can cause some real problems.
Yeah. You
know, he had 50-something double-doubles this season, like 50-something in a row. Like, dude, just a walking double-double. Flirts with a triple-double almost every other night. I mean, he's literally like a Timu Nikola Jokic. Like, he just, you know, he's not going to get you crazy numbers, but, I mean, he's in a – crash the paint. He's going to score. But, yeah, I don't think it matters. I think this is great for OKC, just the fact that both these teams are beat up. So, you know, it's whoever. It doesn't matter. I don't think OKC is just healthy, strong. They're ready to roll.
Yeah, man. Thunder is number one in three-point shooting, 30%, 8.5 steals per game, 6.6 blocks per game. They're eighth in pace. OKC can really attack the Kings' lack of shooting or shot blocking. Domantas Sabonis not a shot blocking threat. Allison is not a shot blocking threat. They're 28th in the league with 4.2. Pelicans on the flip side as well. They're 4.6. Depends who's wins. So OKC can attack that from a standpoint. You got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that drive, and he likes to get fouls. Jay Williams also is efficient and know how to get fouls as well. Chet Holmgren can spread out the floor, and he's just one of those new style big men that can just kind of handle the ball from the top of the key and get his own shot and be able to move the ball. Josh Giddey, as fantastic as he is, you know, you kind of give him space and let him shoot the ball. But my best factor for OKC is going to be Lu Dort. He can guard one of the best players. So you can put him on a De'Aaron Fox. So you can put him on a Brandon Ingram, whoever advanced out of here. This dude's average 11 points per game. 39% three-point shooter. So he's going to need to step up big. But honestly, I'm not going to dissect this series as much as Paul said. I got a Thunder because they're young. The Thunder are winning sits. They'll probably slip some games. Maybe the Kings, they'll go in sits, but I feel like they beat the Pelicans 5. Without Zion, man, it's just hard, man. It's just hard. It's just hard. Zion, it's such a shame, man. The dude was playing healthy. I think he played like 70-plus some games this year. He looked fantastic. He lost some weight. And it just – a result of this, man, it sucks, man. It really, really sucks that he got
stronger as the season went on, too, which is crazy. Yeah. As the year went on, he was getting more in shape, more explosive. So it's a shame to see him go down, especially the way he went down. Because this could literally be a whole different conversation if he, you know, landed a little differently against the Lakers. So whoever OKC gets, I'll take OKC in 5.
Okay. Clippers versus Mavericks. Storylines that I got from out of this one is Clippers adding James Harden around Halloween. They went on at one point, they went on a 26-5 run. And then the last 2 months, they came back down to earth or just was kind of disinterested. It was a 500 ball club. They had the one seed at one point. I mean, I think all those four teams kind of flip-flopped. That's how competitive the West was. But on the flip side, Dallas kind of started out a little slow. Then they added P.J. Washington from the Hornets, and then they added Daniel Gafford from the Wizards. Huge. And since March 7, very huge. They had the best defensive rating at 107.2. Luka's MVP candidacy is bigger than ever. This guy's averaging 34 points a game, almost a triple-double, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, and he's doing his own 48% field goal shooting. So Luka seemed to be calling in the square. And yeah, man. So what's your thoughts about this series?
I just really like Dallas right now. I think coming out of the trade deadline, getting two bigs like that is huge for them. Obviously, Kyrie and Luka are – clicking on all cylinders right now, which is terrifying. You know, you have a Derrick Jones Jr. who could play some defense on the other side. So he can guard your wings. So he can guard the Paul Georges. It's interesting. I think this is going to be one of those series, man. Because like for the Clippers, for me, like you got to look at someone like Russell Westbrook, like. I know he was hurt. He's back. You know, he's gonna get a lot of those minutes late in the game. He's gonna run a lot with the second unit. A lot's gonna fall on him to really control the pace of that game. And you know, with just how the Clippers have played, I just think the Mavericks are the team that's clicking at the right time. I'll take Dallas in 6.
Okay, gotcha. Ty Lue definitely need to go small because they played a series last time, and in 21 they matched up, and Luka just targeted Zubac in a pick and roll, pick and pop situation. It was so bad that Lue had to bench him, and have him come off the bench. Mavs opponents shoot 47% against them in the regular season. So games slow down. They need to get back to that in the postseason for sure and try to figure out how to neutralize that. Clips on the side thing, they must spread their defense, the Mavs defense, which I've mentioned before. They've been the best defense since March 7. The Clips are sixth in the NBA at three-point shooting at 38%. They got Norman Powell, who shoot 43%. They got Kawhi Leonard, who shoots 41%. Paul George shoot 41%. James Harden shooting 30%. That's a lot of firepower from threes. And that's whenever you had these threats and you got to guard these guys and you spread that defense that much. So it's owing to the fact that you have these this much threat on the court to have this much firepower from shooting. Games do slow down the postseason, so that could be a factor. And them being a better team, a defensive team, the Mavs, can really give them trouble. Clips got also get to the free throw line, the third in free throw percentage, 83%, and they make free throws made their eighth with 18.3 free throws made in the game. So how to get contact, you know, James Harden's baiting, good at baiting people into making getting fouls. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard's his freak of nature still at his age. He's as healthy that he has been this season. Paul George has been this season. So my X factor is going to be Norm Powell. As I mentioned, 43% on three-point line. He's 13.9 points per game. My for the Mavs, Tim Hardaway, he's streaky, man. But when he's on, he's a threat. 35% three-point shooter on 14 points per game. He's really got to help out Luka and Kyrie to pretty much neutralize this. They got a lot of pieces there. Dante Exum has been playing well for Dallas, so that's a good piece. Kind of like rejuvenating his career with Dallas. He's been fun to watch. So Mavs are playing at the right time. I know there's a lot of noise about them and what they're going to do. And Jason Kidd was pretty much – seat was a little bit warm, but that kind of just done cool off a little bit. So me personally, I think whoever comes out of this series will be a representative in the Western Conference Finals. I got the Clippers in six. I still was a big believer in the Clippers from the beginning of the season when they made the moves. I know they kind of had a slow start, but this will be a fun series. I got Clippers in six. So.
All right, we're split.
Yes, sir. All right. Minnesota Timberwolves versus Phoenix Suns. Wolves' best regular season since two decades, back in the KG era. So that's very good for Kings fans. I know they've been waiting for consistent postseason playoff basketball. They was in the playoffs last year in a really tough dog fight with the Denver Nuggets, man. And it's crazy to see because I know initially last year everybody kind of questioned the fit between Carvey Towns and Rudy Gobert. We've seen it work together this year, even after his knee surgery. Like, they fit Carvey Towns. They would spread the floor. Then you can do that with Naz Reid. So you can go small with Naz Reid, and then if you want to do that, that's an option that you can do. Towns has come back. He had surgery on that knee, and he had 21 points on 7-19 shooting in the 58 minutes that he played over the last few games. So he's just trying to get into games here. The Suns' last 10 games, though, the Suns, they play 10 teams that are in postseason right now, and they have 7 wins. So Suns are really catching on right now. Katie, Booker, and Bill, one of the storylines is that they miss 50 games combined. So that's a lot of firepower to lose, and this is why they're in a position that they are. They're seeding. And then you look at the Suns, they're a top 10 offense, and then they're ranked 13 in defense. And this is under Frank Vogel's first year as he's trying to implement his system, his style, as they moved on from Monty Williams to Frank Vogel and seeing where it goes there. So what are some of the how should these teams plan for each other, Paul? What do you think the Phoenix should do for or this the T-Wolves? How should they plan for each other?
I mean, it's wild, man, because, you know, a week ago the Timberwolves were fighting potentially for a number one seed and the Suns were fighting to not be in the play-in. And here we are. There's six. Minnesota's a three. You know, I'm excited to see Minnesota. Like, obviously, being on the West Coast where they play a lot of late games. I don't get they had a few TV games, but I'm excited to see Anthony Edwards in person. I'm excited to see him on TV. That dude's just a highlight waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. But obviously, with Phoenix, this is why you put the big three together. This is why you get those guys. This is why you get the Devin Bookers, the Kevin Durants, the Bradley Beals. You know, you sprinkle in Nurkic. Nurkic will be my X factor just because he's going to have to control the glass one of those big bodies of Minnesota. He's have to stay out of foul trouble. He's very, very prone to foul trouble. And I think if he can stay on the court, you know, he can protect her. He can get some blocks. I think that's going to be the key, is they're going to have to get rebounds and they're going to have to get second chance points versus Minnesota. Minnesota is just so big. And, you know, for Minnesota, I'm just excited to see Anthony Edwards. I'm going to say Anthony Edwards will be their X factor just because he's going to have to go at whoever's trying to guard him.
Mm-hmm.
He can get a Devin Booker. He can get some fouls on some of those guys, keep them off the floor. But, you know, you have what Mike Conley's their point guard. So they have a veteran point guard on that team, which is huge.
Yep.
That goes a long way. A veteran presence on a team like that with an Anthony Edwards is huge. But Phoenix, like you said, 7 out of the last 10 games against playoff teams. I'm going to take Phoenix. I'm going to take Phoenix in the upset I'll take Phoenix in 7.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, man. Thing I worry about Phoenix, they're dead last and bench scoring with 26 points per game. That'd be problems. But sometimes the playoffs, the rotation shortened, so I know bench scoring doesn't really become as prevalent in the postseason as it has in the past. So maybe this stat would be obsolete. About the bigs as you mentioned, Minnesota is just so big. So how would Nurkic and Eubanks and Bobo match up against them? Suns do have a better contested rebound rate, though, compared to the Timberwolves. The contested rebounds for the Suns is at 30%, and for the T-Wolves is 29.8. So even though that's kind of small, but compared to the size of what they have versus the Suns, that's an interesting stat to watch. It just shows you see who's going to be more physical on the boards here. As you mentioned, that Devin Booker and Anthony Edwards matchup is going to be so fun to watch. This is such great. Two shooting guards and two fantastic young shooting guards in the game. Devin Booker is averaging 28.3 in postseason play. This compared to in the regular season, he averaged 24.3 points per game. Anthony Edwards' debut in his postseason last year, he had 31.6 points per game against the Nuggets. That's a hell of a debut by him. So, yeah, I'm super excited for this matchup. My X factor, Grayson Allen, the guy who just got paid $70 million for 4 years. This dude is cooking from three-point line. He is 46% from 3 points. That's what happens when you have KD and Bradley Beal. Those things become like layups. You have like five feet of somebody within you. So it makes you look good. But hey, you're making the shots. Cool. And Naz Reid, this is where KD was to go play four, or he even played a five. But now you're forced to go small. But you got that luxury to go to Naz Reid, and he can play that small ball for you. And he's been fantastic. I kind of question why they signed him. They already had two bigs. So Minnesota invested a lot of money in their big, like their front line. But Naz Reid's really paid off. 41% for the big man from 3-point percent. Averaging 13 points, and he gets 5 rebounds a game. I'm picking the T-Wolves. I feel like they got enough experience to kind of take it off. I want to see how that works, but I do think that, as you mentioned, Paul, if they go small and KD plays a four and he's started doing this whole Slim Reaper thing, this could be an upset alert for sure. And the West is going to be crazy. That's what I'm saying. I know I'm picking I'm going safe here. I'm probably going to miss on two of these in the West. That's how crazy. I think I'm going to miss on two of them. And this one, as I'm picking the Timberwolves and Sis, I wouldn't be surprised if the Phoenix Suns figure it out and just get nuclear.
Similar to our Trae Young discussion, if this goes the way you say it's going to go, first round knockout, Suns are gone. Devin Booker gone?
I think they keep Devin Booker, but I think they make a choice on where to go elsewhere. You can't keep that roster the way it is. It's they have this is what I kind of – and I thought the Phoenix Suns was going to be better than this. They can't stay healthy. but it's so perimeter oriented that your bigs suffer at this. Your bench is suffering at this. And at some point, you have to balance out this roster. You just pay Grayson Allen his money now. So I feel like they made that deal with Grayson Allen because it's going to be an affordable deal in the next few years. But I think that they're setting that up, Paul, just in case they lose, that somebody's being moved. I don't know who it is. It won't be probably – I don't know how you can move Bradley Beal. Again, his contract is atrocious, but I don't know. Maybe they can see what they can get for KD. I think they keep Devin Booker. Devin Booker is still like 26 years old. That's a hard decision to kind of move off on him. He's been somewhat productive and been like a face of us. I feel like Devin Booker is safe, my opinion. What's your thoughts?
I mean, it's just hard because he's another one of those guys that his name was floating around the trade deadline. And then, he's in a contract year, right? He has an option into the year. It's depending on what the trajectory is for Phoenix, being as young as he is, seeing how these other teams are doing. You know, the only thing is he's probably gonna be like a super max kind of guy. So if you want to sign him in free agency, you have to pay him a whole lot of money. So if you're the Suns, do you try to get something for him? Do you sign and trade him? Do you get some assets? Because, you know,
so
I think if this doesn't work out for them, the KD, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal experiment kind of is looked at as
over. So Devin Booker is signed to 28.
Okay.
He's safe. I'm trying to see who all aspires. Kevin Durant aspired in 25-26. Bradley Beal's got a player option in 26-27. This team is expensive. That's what I'm saying. Like they gonna have to make a choice. Grayson Allen, who contract aspires, so it's this team is gonna be pretty hefty. I don't know how you build around that, especially losing the first round. That's a failure for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I get where you're coming from with Devin Booker. He's 27. He's young. He's an asset. You can probably get some draft picks. Well, they don't want draft. They want a star. They probably want a star, maybe a big man. You're not looking for draft picks, but you can get a lot of assets with Devin Booker for sure. And I don't think the Suns are willing. Me personally, I know his name was out there, but me personally, if I was making a decision, I'd probably keep Booker around. The last series, the Los Angeles Lakers versus the Denver Nuggets. This is the rematch from last year from the Western Conference Finals. Nuggets started off hot this year. It was 8-1, and then injuries kind of popped up, including Jamal Murray, who had a hamstring injury for 11 games, then an ankle injury, then a right knee injury. that held him out for 7 games. Last postseason, he was killing it, man, on their championship run. He had averaged 26 points per game, 7 assists and 5 rebounds. Shot damn near 40% from 3-point line. So they really was rolling before they had these injuries. They lost 6 games since the All-Star break, so they've been one of the hottest teams going into the postseason. The Lakers have won 11 out of 14 games to get where they have to get the AC to get into the play-in tourney. They would have been in a better position, though. They won the first inaugural in-season tournament, but then they lost, 10 of 13 games after that tournament. So they got the trophy and hung up the banner and I guess gave them bad juju, and then they just kind of swore. But they picked it back up and they went on a little run, but you would have wondered like how they would have picked there. So, Paul, what's your thoughts about the Lakers and the Nuggets and the rematch here? You know, there's a lot of going back and forth between these two teams. And why did the Lakers want to win that game in the play-in and play this matchup? I don't understand. But talk to me. What's your
thoughts? Denver, as stated, is the Lakers' daddy. This is a horrible matchup for Lakers. The Lakers are kind of figuring out a little bit. I mean, they're D'Angelo Russell has really come on the last like month of the season. You know, Austin Reeves is playing better. You know, Anthony Davis is kind of dealing with some back spasm stuff. So, I mean, I don't know how effective he'll be just banging with Jokic. You know, LeBron. LeBron's LeBron. But for whatever reason, they just can't beat this team. And I, you know, even if the series goes long, I just don't think they have the firepower to contest with the Nuggets. I think this is one of those where they can probably hit Denver. They can probably steal one from Denver. But yeah, I just think this is one of those things for me where this is a worst case scenario for the Lakers. I would have much rather win up against Oklahoma City, especially with the way those teams, with the way those teams are built. You know, going up against the defending champs in the first round, tough man. I'll take Denver. I'll take Denver in five.
Okay. Yep, that's my thoughts exactly. I think Denver winning five. The Nuggets have got the Lakers number. They beat Lakers eight straight times. That's eight straight times. So that whole meme of, you know, Michael Malone's who's your daddy? Like he's legit their daddy, man. Like it's been bad. And with Russ Cook, D'Angelo Russell, he had a fantastic close to the season. But last year during the sweep, he was averaging 6 points a game on 32% shooting. This Russ that closed the season been fantastic. So you hope that's the version that they get in this series here. And then Nuggets, I know a lot of things changed. They had a lot of veterans and Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. They're not there anymore. So now you have relied on these young players of, you know, Christian Braun, or you got Watson. And you got, well, he's not a young player, but he's, you know, Reggie Jackson is a veteran that came in and stepped in, you know. So Lakers are not a strong offensive rebounding team. They're average 8.2 rebounds, and they're 30th in the league. And the Nuggets are a top 10 defensive rebound team in the league with 37 rebounds per game. Nuggets really do take care of the ball. So I know Lakers like to get out in transition, and that's what LeBron kind of thrives on, is getting out in the fast break. Nuggets really don't turn the ball over for you to kind of capitalize on that. They're fifth in turnovers with 12.6 per game. My S factors would be Christian Braun coming out party for the sophomore. I know he kind of stepped into the long, had a little role, had a nice little poster dunk before the end of the season. But
yeah, he did.
Yeah, it was nice, man. So, I mean, I know with some of these pieces and the contract they got to deal, they're going to make a choice. He's going to be the next one up. And as I mentioned about D'Angelo Russell, I'm calling him out. You got demons to fight against the Lakers or against the Nuggets, man. And he's a aspiring contract next year. I know he's on a few teams' radars, including the Magic. So I like to have his 41% three-point shooting. Like to have his 18 points per game. I think that'd be solid. But what version of that's going to show up? Is it going to be this version that's 18 points and he's shooting 41% from three-point line, or is it going to be 32% shooting that I mentioned before? But all in all, you appreciate playing the game the way it is. You got to worry about this and whatnot. But I was surprised that it is kind of just didn't just, let's just tank this game and let's play the OKC Thunder. But you never know. Variables. Domantas Sabonis might got hot and could have knocked you out of Lakers. So it's no, just win the game. We're in the playoffs. We'll just go from there. And as you saw, Darvin Ham at the game, he said they want that smoke. They want that smoke.
Mm-mm.
So, nah, man, I'm with you, man. All right, that wraps up all the series. We still got the two playing games, so we kind of broke it down as who could potentially play. But as me and Paul kind of discussed between the number one seeds, as the Rock say, it doesn't matter. it doesn't matter who they play. So, Paul, anything else you got to add? Do you want to add anything else?
It's been a few weeks, but I have a little segment for you, pal.
Ah, beautiful.
I'll end this on a beautiful note here.
This guy stinks segment.
You mentioned some stuff earlier. You mentioned Joel Embiid and how he was trying to meet the CBA games played requirement to qualify for MVP award. And, you know, we had a very heavy debate last week about Jalen Brunson, who for some reason isn't even in some people's top 10 as far as an MVP candidate, which is crazy. And then tonight you mentioned Derek White, who is potentially a shoe-in for most improved player based on how he's played. But I was going to cover the NBA CBA. So for players to be eligible for awards, they must meet the criteria set forth in the NBA-NBPA collective bargaining agreement. Specifically, a player must have played at least A, 65 regular season games, or B, 62 regular season games before suffering a season-ending injury as determined in accordance with the CBA, and then prior to injury have played at least 85% of that team's games. A player is considered to have played a regular season game. For these purposes, he must play at least 20 minutes a game, provided no more than two regular season games. Player, so with at least 15 or fewer minutes, so basically if you play less than 15, doesn't count, and more than 20. So with that being said, I don't know if it's a Knicks situation. I don't know if you guys have seen the articles, but Dante DiVincenzo for the New York Knicks, he appeared in 80 games this season. He sat out a game against the Magic. I think he sat out towards the end of the year. He took over the starting role when all the injuries happened. So he was playing a lot more minutes. He was averaging probably around 17, 18 minutes a game, 15 minutes a game, whatever, earlier in the year. So he is ineligible, despite appearing in 80 games this season, he is ineligible for most improved player because based off of the minute restriction, he only appeared in 64 games. Based off of what it takes to play an actual game. So he had 64 games of over 20 minutes. So therefore, he is ineligible to even be running for most improved player. Now,
that's a weird rule.
He missed a game. There was a game against the Magic early in the year. If he would have played 11 more seconds, he would have hit 20 minutes. And there was a game against the Spurs where the Knicks won big. If he would have played like 8 more seconds, he would hit 20 minutes. And that would have put him over 65 games to make him eligible for postseason awards. So I don't know if it's a Knicks thing. I don't know what it is, if the NBA don't want to give the Knicks any recognition or what, but the fact that you could appear in 80 games and only get credit for 63 or 64 of them because of how many minutes you play, and you're having the best year of your career, you're up to almost, you know, 17 points a game, 16 points a game, and your team is the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference, and you're exceeding all expectations, I just think that they needed to figure something out, because these rules and these regulations and these things just don't make any sense. And I think a lot of people are missing out on recognition and opportunities and potential bonuses in their contracts or whatever because of weird little stipulations like that.
It's a weird rule, man.
Yeah, it's super weird. It's weird. Super weird. He appeared in 80 games, but played over 20 minutes in 63 of them. So because he didn't have a season-ending injury, he is ineligible to be nominated for Most Improved Player of the Year. So NBA, CBA, y'all stink. And
I'm just – go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
And on top of that, shout-out to Jontay Porter for getting fired on his day off like Craig on Friday.
So, I mean, that's just how in the hell a coach supposed to monitor that? And it's not their job to monitor that. Oh, I got to get you in for minutes. No, man, like this, he played 80 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's what should matter. Like, we go off minutes now? That's
crazy, man.
That's mind-boggling to me. And then the whole Porter situation, not excusing what he did, but if we're going to look over that and say, oh, it's integrity of the game and everything like that, but Miles Bridges can put a hand on a woman and, you know, the NBA's I'm just not going to call it NBA. It's sports. Sports is about their bottom line. Are you jeopardizing the profit? All this stuff. But, yeah, so like I said, I get it. He was gambling. And it kind of fits some of the games that he was playing. He can contribute when he was playing, but
I mean, this man over two seasons in the NBA averages 3.7 points and 2.6 rebounds. He is not changing the outcome of any basketball game, aside from anyone that's probably betting on him for a particular reason. He was straight messing up on props on purpose. He might have been playing bad himself, but with the minutes he plays and stats like that, he did not affect the outcome of a basketball game. But that being said, whatever gets you there, man.
You know what's nuts? Even I saw a stat that he only made like $25,000 off those parlays.
Yeah.
And his NBA salary, what he made was like over $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Like, he's not taking Buku money from you. Now the whole where what's the player he's playing in the NBA? He just got arrested for the insurance scandal. That's pretty bad. That's I forgot the guard name. He's playing in the NBA. I'm blanking on, but he just got arrested.
That happens like Big Baby Davis too. They do like all kinds of insurance fraud and stuff like that.
Yeah, insurance fraud. I want to say it was a bench guard. I'm blanking on his name, but I. Came, but yeah, that's third. But hey, whatever, man. It is what it is, I guess. All right. Well, hey, man. This is a leaner podcast because we had to cover.
This was a series. This was the NBA playoff supercast, man. I don't know what I'm going to tell you.
That's why I'm glad that I didn't have another person on here because we would have been at 2 hours. And I'm not trying to do that.
So if you wanna wrap it up, I'm gonna play us out.
All right. So make sure y'all stay tuned for me and Paul. We're gonna definitely try to cap in, get everybody in for more the playoffs and touch basing than that. You can follow the podcast at BLC Podcast. You can follow me at In the Mind of CP, Mr. Mac. Tell me your at name.
Yes, sir. I'm on X at @D_Paul_Mac, on Instagram at @DPaulMac520. And it's the greatest TV sports feed song of all time. I don't care anybody else to say.
Absolutely. As you see in the banner, BIC Podcast on YouTube. You can get us on Facebook, Balls Not Court Podcast there. Instagram, BIC Podcast. TikTok, BIC Podcast. You can get us on Spotify. You can get us on Google Podcast. You can get us on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, wherever you find us before. You can get us there. So, Paul, play that funky tune again, sir.
I don't want to get us a copyright strike.
Okay, that's it. Well, you heard a little bit of it. He kind of blurred it out, but hey, NBA on NBC. That was the theme, right?
Yes, sir. You know it.
So beautiful. I'm so glad that we got
ready for. Let's get ready for an awesome weekend. You be safe this Saturday. I know you're going to be out running amok, being a reckless youth,
being a heathen. Uber and catching back, and because I'm older, I can't do this anymore. But hey, nonetheless, guys, speaking for Mr. Paul Matt Cortez, Paul, Balls on Court Podcast. Happy playoffs, everybody.
Peace.